Welcome to the FF Faceoff, where fantasy football is debated. Here are your hosts from the East Coast, who've never heard a bet they didn't like, Michael Hoff and Anthony Servino.
Welcome in, everyone. It's a power hour on a Wednesday afternoon. We have Anthony Servino at The Real FF Guru. I'm Jim Coventry from RotoWire. You can find me at Jim Coventry NFL, and we are on the FF Faceoff. Today, we are going to finish the NFC East, the Washington football team that we ran out of time, but we gave you quality over quantity, and we'll begin to trek through the NFC North. We're going to want to see the opinions we have on one Justin Fields, maybe one Aaron Rodgers, but let's not waste any time, Mr. Anthony Servino. How are you this fine day?
Jim, I'm doing fantastic today. Really excited to finish up Washington. I think they're one of the more intriguing teams going into this season, and a lot of it has to do with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Absolutely. Oh, man, getting Fitz rolling. He's finally on a team. He could be in the first playoff game of his entire career if it shakes out just right for him. But imagine that, the long career this man has had, and he's never sniffed a playoff game.
Yeah, and that's what pops out to me. What are we really expecting out of Ryan Fitzpatrick? I know in a fantasy football world, we love it because what he's done in the past, ever since the New York Jets and most recently Miami. But do we really think that he is good enough to get this Washington football team? Because 6-7 games isn't going to win that division this year. They're going to have to get to double-digit wins.
No, you're correct. So let's start our in-depth dive at his team with the defense, because I don't think with this particular team we could cover the offense first. So we're going to be using Sports Info Solutions percentile ranks on last year. Now, this Washington defense, at each positional group, they placed in the 65th percentile or better. This was one of the better defenses in the league. Their best strength, though, was on the edge with 80th percentile play. And we know this year things are going to get better because one Chase Young is now in his second year. Montez Sweat is now in his third year. And so that is going to improve. But one more thing I'm going to add before we move on with this. A cornerback group that was very solid 65th percentile. They add William Jackson in the offseason. Now, we talk about this all the time, Anthony. In today's NFL, if you either can rush the passer or you can cover the pass, you're in decent shape. But I think that this defense can do both. I think they'll have a hellacious pass rush, and I think the coverage is vastly improved with Jackson. What are your overall thoughts about what you're expecting from the Washington football team's defense?
You know, I believe they performed my expectations. I thought Ron Rivera and really Jack Del Rio, who's extremely underrated in my eyes as defensive coordinator, I do believe he should get another head coaching job. That Raiders team hasn't been the same since he left. He even made Jacksonville relevant a long time ago in a successful club, but they really turned that around. They were a top 10 defense, and there's more to come. If that offense was better last year, dare I say, they could have beaten my guy Tom Brady in the playoffs if they had any semblance of an offense? Absolutely.
Yes.
And a lot of it came down to the quarterback play.
100%. And speaking of the quarterback play, Alex Smith was absolutely brutal. Again, Sports Info Solutions, they had 12th percentile quarterback play from Alex Smith. That is only going to go up. So now that we've established our thoughts on the defense, Anthony, the first thing I want to ask you is, are we going to see any shootouts, or are we going to see a more conservative game plan because of the style of defense they play? What are your thoughts on that before we dive into the individual players?
I know it was against Dallas, but and I'm a Cowboys fan, so this really sticks out, but that Thanksgiving Day game, when they absolutely manhandled that defense. They had their way, and it was all Antonio Gibson had a breakout, a career game, and in a very short career so far. Now we're going to factor in Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he does have that YOLO mentality. I have nothing to lose at this point. I'm going to throw it downfield. They added Curtis Samuel, Dynamy Brown, and, of course, Terry McLaurin. I think this could be a really explosive offense, but I don't know if they want to win that way.
And that is the concern we have, because this is a very strong defensive team. They may choose to be methodical on offense. Now let's talk about Scott Turner. So Scott Turner is the offensive coordinator. And as expected, he ran quite a bit of 11 personnel, three receivers. He ran the 11th most in the league last year. The problem was their wide receiver play was very, very bad, 26th percentile. McLaurin was fine, but Cam Sims wasn't utilized because of the lack of arm of Alex Smith. And Steven Sims basically was a no-show after a strong finish to 2019. So running this 11 personnel, although it was optimal, now we have Fitzpatrick. We have McLaurin. Curtis Samuel comes in. Not concerned about the Adam Humphries ad, but the Samuel move, getting him in the slot, maybe Cam Sims on the outside. And I want to add something else. Pre-snap motion, six in the league, helping the quarterback identify defenses. And also, they were middle of the pack with play action. So they will, between the upgrade with Curtis Samuel, the upgrade at quarterback, and the use of motion and play action, how do you think this affects Ryan Fitzpatrick's ability to attack defenses?
This can only help him, though. I mean, that's how I see it. All this misdirection and motion could confuse a defense and open things up for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And if anything else, it should create, at least Scott Turner will dial up the check down, and maybe that check down play, there's open field in front.
Absolutely correct. And we'll add something to this. The strongest portion of their offense last year was their offensive line play. They got 70th percentile offensive line play. So Fitzpatrick walks into one of the best situations of his career in terms of he has good skill position players, and we haven't even yet talked much about Antonio Gibson. We mentioned him, but he has good receivers, potentially excellent receivers, a good offensive line, and we've yet to talk about Logan Thomas either, who's, you know, potentially a weapon there. So in terms of the receivers, we'll save the running game for a little bit now, ahead of now. McLaurin, how high or not high are you on him for this year?
Ever since that Ryan Fitzpatrick signing, you know, I was always wanting to say there's two receivers that if you give them a Patrick Mahomes, and obviously Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't Patrick Mahomes, but Ryan Fitzpatrick also isn't Alex Smith. So if you give him a quarterback who's not afraid to bring it or to throw it downfield, there's an A.J. Brown, and Terry McLaurin doesn't really get the opportunities. And in McLaurin, it was opportunities and erratic quarterback play. I would rank these guys a lot higher. So McLaurin's a back-end wide receiver one for me just because of the add of Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes, and I actually have aggressively moved Terry McLaurin to wide receiver 8 on my personal board. So I'm with you. Back in, you know, wide receiver 1, I am with you on that. He has not had good quarterback play in his career. And as we both talked about, the play action that Scott Turner runs, the offensive line protection, and a gunslinger quarterback who peppers his alphas with targets. To me, this is a perfect storm. We have seen McLaurin put up high-end numbers at bad quarterbacks. This could be an amazing season, and he may significantly outperform even the wide receiver 7 that I have him at. Let's move to Curtis Samuel. What are your expectations for Curtis Samuel this year?
I'm a Curtis Samuel guy. I always like the versatility. You know, he lines up all over the formation. They'll give him handoffs, really explosive. And there's a fun fact, even though Teddy Bridgewater, you know, I know he rushed for a couple of touchdowns, but he threw a career-high 15. That's not a high number. Those wide receivers of Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, and DJ Moore, they all totaled over 1,000 yards. And for Curtis Samuel, he got there because of his explosive rushing ability. You add this piece of the offense, and earlier, I didn't want to interrupt you when you were talking about Cam Sims and Steven Sims, because it made me think. I remember a couple of years ago when everybody was all in on Trey Quinn. Washington, ever since they moved off of Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, they never really had more than one receiver. And I think they went out and got one this time. You know, we're not going to trust these guys we're getting, you know, from practice squad or the back end of the draft. We need to draft another one, and we got to go sign one if we're going to give this offense a shot. So Curtis Samuel, I don't think he hurts Terry McLaurin. I think Terry McLaurin helps Curtis Samuel. If not, we just see maybe a lateral move because Samuel's always been the B guy with the DJ Moore.
Yes, no, I very good call on that. And when you're talking about Samuel, we mentioned earlier, Scott Turner had Washington sixth in the use of pre-snap motion. Well, guess who's going to be the man in motion on many of those plays? It's going to be Curtis Samuel, whether they throw out of that motion, whether they toss sweep to him, but he will probably be the recipient. And my guess is, knowing Turner's philosophy, Curtis Samuel was a tactical add in free agency because he fits exactly what Turner and the offense want to accomplish. That moves us on. I think at receivers, we're probably good with those two. I think at the end of the day, anybody else, if they emerge as a waiver wire option, great.
Right.
But after we got a great season, great, maybe overstating it, out of Logan Thomas, he had Alex Smith last year. Alex Smith likes to throw to his backs and his tight ends, doesn't really push the ball downfield. It was a perfect storm for Logan Thomas. What are we getting out of him this year?
I am a little bit worried about Logan Thomas because of the quarterback change and because of the additions of Curtis Samuel and Dynamy Brown. I think they take away from Logan Thomas. Last year, Logan Thomas was the essentially, I guess, I don't want to call him the wide receiver too, but he was the second pass-catching option, maybe third if you want to throw J.D. McKissic at number two. There wasn't much. That's why these guys thrived.
Yes, and when we look back at Logan Thomas' season, he was getting a ton of targets. In only a few weeks did he put up numbers that were worthy of those targets. There were a lot of very poor performing weeks when he was getting 8 or 9 targets. And so it was very volume-driven, quarterback-dependent. So I think you're absolutely correct. And I think that, to me, he's a borderline tight end one. And that's not saying a lot. Because outside the top 5 to 7 tight ends, it's a significant drop-off. And I think he falls back down to earth after that season he had out of nowhere. Now, the one thing many listeners have been waiting for, they want to hear about Antonio Gibson. So first thing, look, J.D. McKissic was a major factor in the offense last year. But it had to be a function of Alex Smith. Check down Charlie, screen pass, pass pro. Even though he's a real small guy, he knew how to chip, and that helped him. But he also knew how to get out into a quick route. And so I think it was a perfect fit for him. Is McKissic going to be a factor this year to take away from Antonio Gibson or not?
I don't think J.D. McKissic's just going to go away. He actually had a really good season, but in terms of the type of volume, it's almost like Logan Thomas. I do not expect and I will not project anywhere close to that type of volume again. Now, there were weeks that J.D. McKissic was popping as a running back one, but how many those 10, 11, 12 target weeks? They're gone. Is there a world where Antonio Gibson goes down? Then obviously we view J.D. McKissic differently. But as long as Antonio Gibson's the guy, we know he can catch too. I see a decrease. I don't want to say a minimized workload for J.D. McKissic, but certainly decreased.
You know, you mentioned if Gibson goes down, it's a very weird depth chart after McKissic. We have Peyton Barber, who's terrible, but he still gets the ball somehow. We have Lamar Miller, who's about 3 years and 2 injuries over the hill. But Jonathan Williams is sitting on the depth chart. If Gibson were to get hurt, I think he would move in to an early down role. I don't think J.D. McKissic could handle that if he was given that. Obviously, if they were playing in hurry up, he certainly could as a receiving asset. But the depth chart, you know, when you look at it, yeah, not great players, but Jonathan Williams could actually do a little something. So for Gibson, how bullish or not are you on him for the season?
I'm in on Antonio Gibson. I find myself taking him a lot, especially in the underdog best ball drafts. If you want to draft with the FF Faceoff, use the code FACEOFF when you sign up. Look for the links in our bios and on social media. But yeah, I think Antonio Gibson, if there's any back, because last year's rookies, well, it was Cam Akers, and we have DeAndre Swift. Of these, let's call it these three, you know, J.K. Dobbins as well. Of these players, Antonio Gibson, I believe, has the highest ceiling. I love the defense, and that's a big thing for me is Washington's defense. There's going to be a lot of 4-minute drills, especially if they have a lead at the end of the game, and those carries are going to go to Antonio Gibson. They're not going to put Peyton Barber or Jonathan Williams in for those, you know, clock-killing drives. They're going to put it to their best back. They don't want 2 yards a carry. They want 4 and 5, pick up that first down, end the game. And I think that plays into the upside of an Antonio Gibson. Now, what worries me, Morgan Moses, they want to release or trade him. That's the right tackle.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. Now, I know they drafted Samuel Cosmi. I don't know if they have plans to move him over. I know Cornelius Lucas had some snaps last year. Can't see that they were, enthralled with him a whole lot. They did bring in Charles Leno at left tackle, so fine enough there. But that sounds like an odd move. And usually if a team makes that announcement that they're looking to trade a player, or they're going to let him go at some point. So that potentially is problematic. But I have to think, with this team that is potentially competitive, they have to have liked something on their roster.
Is it Everett Flowers? I know they traded for him. They traded back for him.
You're right. You're right. They have him listed as a guard on the depth chart, but he does have tackle experience.
Yeah, he was a first-round tackle of the Giants.
Yes, he was. So you know what? Maybe that's the move. Yeah, maybe. And I'm looking at the RotoWire depth chart, and yeah, he had him listed as a guard, but I think that could be it. And maybe that's their move. Thinking that he maybe, but Moses actually graded out above average. Somebody said Pro Football Reference. I read from RotoWire site, and so maybe that must be where the ranking came from. But Moses ranked very well, not super. But that is interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. But again, just hoping that if they're going that route, they have a plan in place. Now, many fantasy managers may not even realize on a per-game basis last year in PPR leagues, Gibson was an RB1. And in one of those games, I think he played 3 snaps. It was the Pittsburgh game. He went out with an injury early. And so this is a player that he was legitimately an RB1. And he comes back this year with the likelihood of seeing an extended workload. Remember, last year was a mess with the COVID camp. And he comes in, as you mentioned earlier, they may be protecting some leads late. And we saw against Dallas on a Thanksgiving game. Late in that game, when Dallas was worn down on defense, he ripped them up in the second half in a game Washington played with a lead. And, of course, you're not going to have 2 long touchdowns every week. But this could be a blueprint for how we see Gibson break out. And I have him firmly as an RB1. And whenever I could get him in the second round, I'm thrilled. Now, I was recently in a 14-team draft, and I had the 9th pick. And when it came back around, he got scooped up right before me. I was a little salty about that. But there have been plenty of drafts so far where he's fallen to the mid-second round. And if you could get him there, I think that's an absolute steal.
I have, I think, 2 best ball teams with Zeke and Gibson.
Yeah, that's an outstanding duo. And with the upside there, yeah, you can really, really put some teams behind you in the standings with that going on. So overall, I think we've done a pretty good job of covering the Washington football team. So we are going to move to the NFC North. Starting out alphabetically, the Chicago Bears. Hey, they addressed their biggest need in forever, trading up to the 11th spot, getting Justin Fields. Yeah, I think we just start there. What are your thoughts on Fields? We don't know if he's starting week 1, but should he get in the mix at some point? And I know maybe we don't know yet, but people want to hear your thoughts. What do you think about him?
You know, I like Justin Fields a lot. I'm a little surprised. Is there a little bit of me worried that he did fall? Yes, but I'm going to buy into the upside. I love the move by Chicago. I think Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, they know the writing is on the wall. Something has to change, and they went in to get their guy. As far as if I think he's going to start week 1, wasn't Nagy the offensive coordinator in Kansas City with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes? And I think that narrative, and guess what? I think what this tells us, let's say Fields is the backup. This tells me that Pace and Nagy know they have an extra year. just from an organizational standpoint. I think they buy themselves time by going this route.
Yeah, that's an excellent call, and that could be the case, because we know that trade up was to save their jobs. And as you said, there could be a second part to that. Now, I don't think the Bears front office is a buck that goes over Pace's head. I don't think ownership is going to push them to start him day one, but if they had any brains, they would. But I'm not giving them credit for that, because I just don't see that franchise being forward-thinking enough to do that. However, it can't be long before he's in, because last year the Bears had fifth percentile quarterback play and third, yes, and 23rd percentile wide receiver play. Now, I think those go hand in hand. I think the problem with the receiver, now it was basically Robinson and Mooney, but other than that, Anthony Miller was a mess in the slot. Drops, inconsistency, but the quarterback play certainly didn't help. It was bottom of the barrel. So any improvement there is going to be huge for them. They didn't really make additions at receiver. They spent a sixth-round pick. I don't think that's going to be any shakes here. So realistically, if they go to three receiver sets, they are going to be overmatched. But if Fields is in there, his mobility will help. Now, the thing I didn't like, the Bears were in the bottom 11 in their use of 11 personnel last year. And I think because of the lack of personnel, they were forced to that. They were trailing a lot, and they needed to run 11, but they couldn't because of lack of players, and they failed to responsibly address that. So that bothered me. Before we move a little more on to this offense, they also weren't using pre-snap motion for their bad quarterback play. Seventh fewest in the league, defenses were able to blitz them mercilessly because the lack of motion kept defenses leaning forward instead of going back on their heels a bit. So that was problematic. Now, they did run the 10th most play action, so if they do that, that'll be helpful. So let's look at the passing game. So Fields gets in. He's got Allen Robinson. He's got Darnell Mooney and not much else. How does this translate?
Listen, you say not much else. They're trying to trade Anthony Miller. That has been the rumor all offseason long.
March.
They brought in Marquise Goodwin. I mean, really, there's nothing here. And
nothing.
By their lack of 11 personnel, this is a tight end heavy team. They still employ Jimmy Graham. Mm-hmm. You have Cole Kmet. I think they have J.P. Holtz, who saw some time. I think they have three big-bodied, versatile tight ends. Maybe we see two wide and two tight end sets a little bit more, especially if it's Fields. How much do you want to drop him back? I think there's going to be a run-dominant offense. You have Tarik Cohen that can do a lot out of the backfield, more than just run the football. You have Damian Williams with a similar skill set as David Montgomery. So I think we're going to see if there's anything in that in the Pandora's box of Matt Nagy from Kansas City. I think it comes out with this type of personnel he has, because this offensive line is not going to be very good.
No. Now, remarkably, and in this line, we both agree, when they were blitzed, they were horrible. But per Sports Info Solutions, they were exactly dead middle of the league in offensive line play. Now, that was probably having to do with the run game success. David Montgomery did do well, but they had a lot of easy run defense. So I think that's where they gained their stripes, but it was the pass pro, and I think that's what you're referring to. Their pass pro was dreadful, and anytime they were in an obvious passing situation, you're absolutely right, Anthony, it was a train wreck because the defense was in the backfield literally with a snap of the football. And Nick Foles paid the price for that, especially. I remember he got knocked out of the game late, but the whole game against Minnesota on that Thursday night, it was a Monday night game. And anyway, he just got harassed once they realized the Bears don't have a passing game and their offensive line can't pass protect. And they did address in the second round. They added offensive tackle Tevin Jenkins with the 39th pick, and that'll help. But I think this line in pass pro is far from being above average.
And where I've got my the Bears were finished last season ranked 20th by Pro Football Focus as a whole.
Yeah, so overall, 20th, not terrible. But like I said, I think a lot of that was run pass splits. And I think when we break it down that way, we understood the true deficiencies at offensive line. So, Allen Robinson, where are you factoring him in this year at wide receiver?
listen, whether it's Fields, who's going to be an upgrade, what do we know about Allen Robinson? Well, next to DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson's quarterback proof. Look what Allen Robinson has had, Blake Bortles, Nick Foles, Mitchell Trubisky, and we've seen a handful of wide receiver one seasons out of him. As long as he's getting the volume, and because of not much else behind him, he's going to get the volume. Whether it's Dalton, who we can make a case as Dalton an upgrade over everything else he's ever had, or Fields, I can see I think Allen Robinson can replicate at least what he did last year, and I think he finished as a wide receiver 13 in fantasy points per game.
Yes, and what I like about the Bears is they'll get him in the slot upwards of 30% of the time. So they don't make him stay in one spot. They make it difficult for teams to double him all the time. Getting him in the slot gets a lot of free releases, and yet he can easily win in coverage and double coverage on the outsides. So you are correct. They are definitely going to get another big season out of him. And I do think that the place I have him on my draft board, I have him firmly as a wide receiver one, but I had him and Terry McLaurin like glued at the hip, and I moved McLaurin ahead of him. I just feel that with Fitzpatrick, who peppers the number one with targets, I think he can get close enough to Robinson's targets and the big play potential that McLaurin brings with that 4.34 speed to that separated the two for me. But I think you can't go wrong spending, you know, a third, fourth round pick on Allen Robinson. You probably get him in the early fourth in some leagues. Third round, it depends. You know, somebody may be excited about him, but that tends to be where he goes. But I think that you would not be disappointed for taking him there. Now, Darnell Mooney, he had a very solid rookie season. Nothing huge, but his quarterback play wasn't very good. But overall, you know, when you come out on a bad quarterback team, and we said it was one of the worst quarterback play in the league, and he posted 631 yards at 4 touchdowns. It's not bad on 98 targets. What are you expecting from Darnell Mooney this year?
Mooney's a guy, I think we know that he's leaped over Anthony Miller on the depth chart. He did flash, especially his big play ability. What surprises me is that he did have 98 targets. It's kind of shocking that he had that many. 61 receptions, 631 yards. The efficiency was terrible. And that's a little bit alarming. 94th in yards per reception at 10.3, 98th in yards per target at 6.4. If we get better quarterback play, maybe they connect on some of those bigger plays and exploit his skill set.
And that was it, because when they did send him deep, the passes were terrible. I mean, you're getting from Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles, that was never going to work out. Now, as you said,
he was 11th in deep targets with 23.
Yes, and the passes were just horrendous, and we saw that over and over. And so, as you say, the potential for him with significantly improved quarterback play, that makes it interesting where he's a player who could take a second-year leap. I mean, think about it. At 630 yards, you don't need much of a leap to be an 800-yard receiver. Now, is that great? No, but that's wide receiver three territory, most likely.
Yeah, that would probably put him right around 12 fantasy points per game, let's say.
Yeah, so I mean, he'd be in that mix, that huge mix of wide receiver three options. But again, with his speed, and if Fields can make good use of him once he gets in downfield, this could be interesting because defenses have to worry about Allen Robinson first, and you know, tight ends will command some coverage. But, you know, I thought it was interesting that Mooney, from early in the season, he was a full-time outside receiver, and I was stunned by that. Was not expecting that at all. It was as early as week three. He started seeing 50 snaps, and then as we got into the second half of the season, you know, upper 50s and into the 60s. But he was playing a lot of snaps. Now, when they played heavy personnel, they sometimes only had one receiver on the field. He'd be off the field a bit. But they committed to him right away, so I think that was strong. Now, at tight end, Anthony, there was a big changing of the guard late in the season. I know Jimmy Graham had some late touchdowns in some games, including the playoff game, but Cole Kmet saw his targets absolutely go through the roof from what they were. Early in the season, he was seeing 1 to 2 targets a game, and that was like through week 12. And then, you know, a 5, a 4, a 7. We had a couple lower target games in there, but none of the, I'm off on that number. There was 1 to 3 targets in the first 12 weeks. Then he had 2 sevens, a 6, an 8. His targets went way up. His production wasn't great, but he was a rookie. What do you think in this year?
I like Cole Kmet, and you do note that they started shifting towards the end of the year. And I remember when I started taking notice, it wasn't so much to production from Cole Kmet. It was he began dominating snap share, and he also began leading in overall routes run ahead of Jimmy Graham. So, yeah, Jimmy Graham may have been the better fantasy finisher, but in terms of what do we expect to start the 2021 season, Cole Kmet's going to be the guy.
100%. Oh, Graham was seeing a number of games in the first half of the season with at least six targets. It was the majority of games through week nine. It was six plus targets. And then once they came out of the week 11 bye, a couple of fours, a three, a couple of twos. He had 1-5 thrown in there. But other than that, it was very clear, as you said, Cole Kmet took over. Now,
Weeks 13 to 17, Cole Kmet had six plus targets in four of those games, in three of those games, north of seven. So 7, 7, and an 8. Dominated the end of the year.
Oh, absolutely. And like you said, the production wasn't great because he was a first-year tight end. We don't expect first-year tight ends to come out and produce, even if they do get opportunity. So what type of league would you take Kmet in? What are you expecting?
If I have to draft multiple tight ends, and I talk about best ball a lot, that just seems the type of drafts I'm doing right now. I like Cole Kmet as like a number two in best ball, whether I get one of the top tight ends, a Kelsey, or even if I'm taking a shot on Kyle Pitts, George Kittle, Darren Waller at the top. Then I'll draft a Cole Kmet later and then leave the position alone. But if, let's say, I wait until round 10 to get my first one, then I definitely want to get a Cole Kmet and pair him with an Evan Ingram and maybe even a Zach Ertz you can get for free. So that's where I'm at with Cole Kmet and best ball. In redraft, I don't know if I trust him yet to be my guy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do see the potential for production. But it, like you said, it have to be a two tight end league, and it would have to be, that lower mid range tight end too. So yeah, there's a lot to think about. Jimmy Graham, I still think he gets too many red zone targets for my liking. That's problematic because if you're taking away some of the touchdowns, that's something that the tight ends need, especially if they're ones that we're not sure going to get a lot of, passing production through the air. So that's something to consider. So yeah, we will look though, and this is a player. To the fantasy managers listening, if Cole Kmet gets out to a reasonable start, he could be a priority add on waivers. And a lot of leagues, single tight end leagues, definitely on waivers. And he could be somebody, if he jumps out, he could emerge into something because they really need a presence in the middle of the field. As you mentioned earlier, they have completely soured on Anthony Miller. As you said, back in March, they put him on the trade block, which means he could get cut. Well, I don't know there's much more we want to talk about the Bears. I think that the defense, we kind of know what to expect, so I don't think we need to dwell too much. And I think the offense is going to be similarly run as the last year, but however, with the emergence of the tight end. So we're going to move on to the Detroit Lions. Hey, they're 1-32. Dan Campbell, not too excited about that move. That does not seem like an analytics-driven hire. Anthony Servino, what do you think about Dan Campbell?
I know initially it's like, what, are they serious with this hire? He's a motivator. Personally, you're getting paid to play football. Be motivated. Be happy. What you're making, go to work, be happy. Your paycheck's your motivation. But Dan Campbell comes from what? Sean Payton, and Bill Parcells. I know he played for Bill Parcells. So did Anthony Lynn and Aaron Glenn. And what this tells me, and Anthony Lynn's the offensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, the former cornerback's the defensive coordinator, this is going to be a fundamentally sound football team. I don't know if this helps them win games in year one, but they're not going to be an easy out. I think Detroit's going to be a very, very tough and gritty team, but I don't know if that helps them into wins immediately.
Absolutely correct on that. So basically, the first thing we have to talk about, though, is the quarterback position. Last year, the Lions got 62nd percentile play against Sports Info Solutions. Last year, Jared Goff, playing with McVay, who knows how to use his quarterbacks, was only 33rd percentile. And arguably, he has far worse targets this year, a far less progressive system. As you mentioned, Anthony Lynn is going to probably lean a little more run heavy. From the quarterback's standpoint, I am very concerned when they fall behind on the scoreboard that Jared Goff is going to be in massive trouble. What are your thoughts on Goff?
I'm worried about Jared Goff. And you know, you can only make excuses for so long. He popped earlier in his career, and it just seems like he's regressed year after year, and the weapons have always been there. He's always had terrific weapons. You know, is it Todd Gurley? Was it that loss and a little bit of an offensive line regression 2 years ago? That's when we started to see Jared Goff fall off. I know they had a decent running game with Akers and Henderson last year, but maybe that threat of Todd Gurley is what Jared Goff thrived off of. Whatever it was, the trust soured there towards the end of the year, and now we're looking at Jared Goff in Detroit, and you no longer have Cooper Kupp. You don't have Sammy Watkins or Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods and all these. Like, you have Breshad Perriman, Geronimo Allison. I mean, I can go through this entire wide receiver depth chart. It's so underwhelming. You lose Galladay. You lose Marvin Jones. You think they're going to go after one in the first round. And I like the Penei Sewell. I think that was a great pick. I think that was a wise pick. But what are they going to do at wide receiver? Are we really in on Amon-Ra St. Brown?
And that, I'm glad you brought that up. That was an interesting draft pick. Now, I know a lot of people are creating buzz for him. He's a slot guy. His numbers, very slow. Horrible time in the 40. Agility, which a slot receiver relies on that agility, very average. To me, those two metrics, it's okay if you're a slow slot receiver, as long as you are agile. He's not. I think based on his testing numbers, he better be way better than those numbers show. But it's really hard. If you are not agile, I don't know how you get open in the slot. We, as you mentioned, Goff had Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp may not be able to run, but he's got like 90th percentile agility. That's what allowed that to work. And also all that pre-snap motion that Sean McVay ran and the easy passes that Goff was able to connect them. That offensive system is not here. You are correct. And Jared Goff is horrible when he's under pressure, especially if he has to read defenses. I think that McVay got the absolute most out of him. And I think that Jared Goff could struggle to throw 15 touchdowns this year.
This offensive line, I'm a little bit more bullish on because of Penei Sewell and Frank Ragnow, highest paid center, I believe, in the league. Taylor Decker, really solid offensive line. They want to run the football. And the more I look at this depth chart for pass catchers, this screams TJ Hockenson, everybody else. And yeah, 15 touchdowns, maybe 18 max from Jared Goff. I don't like him for fantasy, but do I think he can manage a game? Maybe. As long as he's not playing from behind and he has a lead, I think they can finish a couple of games off. But other than that, Jared Goff, he's like Derek Carr territory for me.
You know, when you mentioned the word manage, can he manage a game? My answer is only if he's managed by the coach. I think McVay managed him, and that's why he was, you know, borderline decent. And I think that was it. I think we're going to see a very scary picture here this year. And I think that at pick 7, yeah, Penei Sewell was a nice pick, but they really should have gone after a quarterback, because if they win 5 games, 6 games this year, and they may not, but if they do, that puts them out of that top quarterback equation. They, and as you mentioned, the line is good. They may be able to run. Defense, not great. They got some pieces, but a lot of the pieces that were holdovers were brought in for that specific system that Matt Patricia ran. So that's a little bit problematic. I mean, they're hoping to get something out of the corner. Jeff Okuda, they drafted high last year. They got Quentin Dunbar over from Seattle, I believe. They could get moderate corner play. But overall, front seven, aside from an aging Jamie Collins, this is a team that's going to play from behind a lot. And as much as they want to get the run game going, I don't know how long they're going to be able to commit to it. And the warts on this team are going to show off. But while we're talking about this, that's going to bring us to DeAndre Swift. They're going to try to run. He's a good receiving back, so that may help him. And Goff may have to get rid of the ball to escape getting beat up. What are your thoughts for DeAndre Swift this year?
I'm in on DeAndre Swift, and I brought Swift up earlier when we were talking about Antonio Gibson. Gibson is my, you know, of the backs last year, I would rank them Gibson, Swift, Dobbins, Akers right now. I like DeAndre Swift a lot. Now, does the concussions That worried me a little bit. I remember when Adrian Peterson came out and said, hey, you know, he's still, that could be an issue, especially playing running back, but he's still only going into his second year. And I don't want to draft scared, at least not now with DeAndre Swift, because when he did get the opportunity, he ultimately ran away with that job and made Kerryon Johnson more expendable than Kerryon Johnson made Kerryon Johnson.
I like that statement. That's an outstanding statement. DeAndre Swift, I do have him right at that borderline at the end of the RB1s. I think that there's a world where he could see a lot of receptions. But you're right. I mean, the concussion, that was scary. It was a long-term injury. And you get another one, it could be a similar situation. So I think that has to definitely put a little bit of a nick on where you'd consider drafting him. Similarly, talented players, I think you move him maybe a little behind just until we have a healthy year in the books from him. But I think as running backs are flying off the board, as they're in a lot of fantasy leagues this year, and they're already drafting, I still think he's at borderline late first, early second pick, and I think he's going to stay there. But overall, if he does maintain health, I do think he could definitely get you that value in the PPR leagues.
10 of 13 games that DeAndre Swift appeared in, he had 11-plus PPR points. And, you know, from weeks 10 to 17, and he did miss a couple of games because of the aforementioned concussion, but from his last, and I'm just going to count him out, 1, 2, 3, 4, his final five games, he scored 5 touchdowns.
Yes, he did finish strong. So I am very solidly in on him as that lower end RB1, and depending how the draft board falls and where I'm picking, by picking late in the first round, there is a good chance I have definite shares of him. I'm not shying away from him. Again, as you said, the concussion was scary, but not shying away. Now, receiver. Yes, it's a mess. Rashad Perryman, when he's been healthy those rare times, the last 3 years, he's had flashes. He can't play. But the problem is, can Goff get the ball downfield? Tyrell Williams started out his tenure with the Raiders decent, but then he injured his foot and he was playing on a significant foot injury the rest of the season. They both have great metric profiles, speed, agility. They're both very good, but they haven't been producers in the NFL. And I'm concerned that Jared Goff is not the man to get much out of them. Thoughts on Perryman and Tyrell Williams?
Scared, worried. You know, these are players who have popped, but they can't stay healthy. And, you know, quarterback-wise, Rashad Perryman, we saw the best of him when Godwin and Evans were all banged up. I remember the final Jameis Winston games during his tenure in Tampa when it seemed like that whole wide receiver room had a hamstring injury. They all had one. And we saw Rashad Perryman really, you know, win fantasy football championships that year for, you know, in a 3-4 game stretch. Tyrell had one big year with the Chargers, and it was like we never heard from him again. I think he finished as a top 20 receiver. It was like him and Robbie Anderson popped that year, and they never really got back on track except for Robbie last year.
Correct, yes. Now, Perryman, if we go back to the year when Freddie Kitchens wasn't the coach, he was the offensive coordinator, and Baker Mayfield was a rookie, Rashad Perryman was on that team, and he had an actual strong finish to the season. I'm not going to remember the numbers, but I honestly had a couple 80-yard games. He was having a strong finish to the season, as you mentioned with Tampa. Strong finish to the season when the injuries hit. And even last year, there was a week where the Jets played the Patriots, and I know I used him in a DFS lineup, and he absolutely shredded Stephon Gilmore. Yes. So I do believe there is talent there. But Jared Goff gets me worried. Now, if you're looking for a wide receiver 6 in best ball leagues, I don't see a reason why you don't consider Perryman. Because if they're going to trail, if he's going to get targets, yeah, the health is always an issue. We don't know when he's going to be on the field or not. But in a very thin depth chart, he could be a decent best ball player because he can make plays after the catch. But again, we're not expecting much. Wide receiver 6, that's not bullish at all. That's a top 72 receiver, but the possibility exists for that. Aside from that, let's move to tight end. So TJ Hockenson, so he was in year 2 last year, and overall he made a very positive jump forward. What are you looking for in year 3 as he goes from Matthew Stafford to Jared Goff?
Like I said a few minutes ago, I think TJ Hockenson can ultimately lead this team in receiving. We don't know how this line's going to be. I know they look good on paper, but if there's no semblance of an offense, you could pin your ears back, especially with how poorly these wide receivers can ultimately be because of the injury concerns with Perriman and Tyrell Williams and forget about Geronimo Allison. If there's no semblance of a passing attack, they're going to pin their ears back and come after Jared Goff, which means a lot of targets to the running backs and the tight ends. Could we be looking at a Logan Thomas type target share?
And
or TJ Hockenson? He had 101, fifth amongst tight ends last year, but that number's going up.
Absolutely. It's a good call on him. And if he gets that Logan Thomas share, this kid could explode. There was a stretch from week 7 through week 13 where he had five of seven games, 59 yards or more. He had a 59, a 65, 68, 89, and 84. That was a stretch for a tight end. And even earlier in the season, he had three games over 50 yards to start the season. So he is the real deal. And from an athletic standpoint, he's not the crazy tear that we see in some of these guys. But, you know, he ran a 4.7 40, which are a tight end. That's well above average. And it's his agility. 89th percentile in the shuttle, and he 90th percentile in the cone drill, and his explosiveness is like near that range as well. So he is, again, not quite Noah Fant explosiveness, but he's not that far off, and this kid could really make a massive leap, and you're getting him about tight end 5 in leagues roughly, and I think he easily could be well worth the ADP he's drawing.
Are you taking TJ Hockenson over Kyle Pitts or Mark Andrews?
Absolutely over both, yes. On my depth, my chart, my big board, I still have Andrews ahead of him, but I won't take Andrews where he's going. So it's one of those things that – so I will never take him there. So even though I have him listed there, there's no consideration. So, yes, I would take Hockenson because Hockenson gets drafted a little later in a point in the draft, depending on what my roster looks like, that I would be willing to make the move to grab him. So that's it's a kind of a hedge answer. But Kyle Pitts, no, I am out. Because when we are counting on a player to be an outlier, we talked about this on previous shows.
Yes.
I'm not making that bet. I am not making it. He has all the traits. Hey, Vernon Davis did. He was terrible. Not terrible, but he was not a fantasy commodity his first 2 years. We see these athletic players come in, and they don't always start out year one. So I'll let somebody else take that rich ADP move. And I have Pitts behind TJ Hockenson for sure on my board, but that's not even a consideration. What about you?
I would certainly take Hockenson over Mark Andrews, and I like Mark Andrews a lot, but volume obviously is the worry. Even a guy like Robert Tonyan, he was so efficient. He was Tonyan was like a poor man's Mark Andrews with the way he was scoring touchdowns last year, and he only had like 58 targets, something crazy. And as far as Kyle Pitts, yeah, sure, I am taking my shots on Kyle Pitts in the best ball mania, because to win a tournament like that, mm-hmm. you need an outlier to pop. But in a normal circumstance in a region, I'm not touching him. What is he going to do? Do we have Julio Jones? Are we not going to have Julio Jones? If we don't have Julio and they're going to try to take Kyle Pitts out, like, if anything, if you want Kyle Pitts to really pop, Julio should be there. Because what are you going to do? Let Julio and Calvin Ridley go one-on-one and double the rookie? No. But all of a sudden, if you take Julio away, now you can focus on Kyle Pitts if he looks the part.
Yes. Well, I think that's a good place to stop our Detroit Lions analysis. There's a couple pieces of news that we didn't get to, so let's cover a couple of those before we sign off at top of the hour here. So earlier in the day, we had a report on Antonio Brown that he had knee surgery and he had to pass a physical. But then updated news came in that Greg Allman of The Athletic reported Brown's knee procedure's 3 to 4 week timetable, should be ready for training camp. Had a quick hit. What are you expecting from Antonio Brown this year?
I think Antonio Brown, listen, when you have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, they're all well and good, especially on the Godwin end. There's always the injury concerns. I think we see what we saw last year out of Antonio Brown. If he needs to step up, he will. Otherwise, they're not paying him much. It's not like they have to force him the ball. I don't think Tom Brady's going to force him the ball at all. Also, what's up with these recent legal issues that came back up? That's what I'm really trying to dig in. There was a report, I think, last week that he may have ran into some legal issues again.
Yeah, and it didn't sound like criminal charges. It sounded more like civil charges, and we don't know what the legal end up doing with that, but you're right. So that's something always to keep an eye on. And maybe at this point, Brown is going very late in drafts. So could be worth a flyer in a best ball league, especially if Godwin or Evans were to go down. But to expect a solid, strong role, superstar days of Antonio Brown, there's a lot of variables, and unless you're spending low draft capital, may not be worth the risk.
And they're loaded at receiver, right? I mean, you know, Scotty Miller, Tyler Johnson looked pretty good in the few opportunities he did get. OJ yes. Howard's coming back.
He is. So there are a lot of bodies who can play, talented players. Now, Paris Campbell played one game last year. He had 63 snaps. I think it was actually two games. He had six catches for 71 yards. Not bad. I was expecting a lot out of him. He's 100% healthy coming into the season. Been a very rocky two seasons to start his career. Any interest in a fully healthy Paris Campbell?
Fully healthy, yes, but, you know, he's played a total of nine games in his first two seasons as a pro. There are the injury concerns there. Right now at Underdog Fantasy, his ADP is great, 163rd player off the board. So, yeah, I'm going to take shots there. I think that offense is going to be better with Carson Wentz throwing the football, because this offense isn't going to run through Wentz. It's going to run through the running game. And I think we see Carson Wentz flourish again, but it's more about injury concern. If I can get Paris Campbell around cost, I'll grab him. If I have to overpay, I don't want anything to do with him.
Exactly. Yes. So again, like Perryman, wide receiver six ish, about six is probably where the ADP is going to, you know, move the needle on him. And with his game-breaking speed, usage in the slot, if healthy, you may have a good player on your hands, because he will get targets in that offense based on, you know, the usage of the slot in Frank Reich's history. So it's just something to keep an eye on through camp. If you're drafting early, it's a flyer right now, not knowing what's going to happen. Anthony, why don't you tell everybody what you're up to these days?
Right now, we are building a website. We have built a website, fffaceoff.com. It's up and running. We are starting to fill it with content. You can see our podathon information there. We're going to be launching a podcast network, and we are looking for contributors. You know, if you want to write podcasts, graphics, whatever it is, shoot me an email or a DM, fffaceoff@gmail.com. Working on a lot of my written content over at the Game Day NFL, primarily focusing on the NFL from a storyline and a betting point of view. And of course, sitting here at the FF Faceoff about 4 days a week and on Wednesdays with Jim.
Yeah, and it's always fun on this Wednesday show. And me right now, we're working on the RotoWire magazine, helping out with a few pieces for that. Excited about getting that to print. I know it's a magazine, but you know what? Some people still like those magazines, and we like doing them. Yeah, no doubt. And I know they say they don't age well, and maybe they don't. But you know what? Fantasy managers, they want food. They want football food. And you know what? Magazines work. So, yeah, we're definitely working on that. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Your time is the most valuable thing you have. For Anthony Servino, I'm Jim Coventry. Everybody have a phenomenal rest of your day.